You are listening to the sassiest podcast in the world. Born in the Nordics, democratizing B2B SaaS knowledge everywhere.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Thomas, and we are experienced SaaS professionals that are curious about how other successful SaaS companies go to market, scale, build winning teams, and great products.
Join us on our journey as we speak to SaaS leaders trying to get hold of their secret sauce.
And today's guest is Bas van Wijk, the VP of Commercial Operations at Ask Cody.
It's very important that you have a clear ICP and a clear persona landscape where you focus on. Because if you change strategy, if you change direction, it's a very slow and heavy boat. So if you want to turn it, it takes a lot of time.
Are you building a SaaS business? Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can help you win bigger deals, enter new markets, and deepen trust with your customers. But it can also cost you real time and money. Vanta automates up to 90% of the work needed to get and stay compliant. Get audit ready in weeks instead of months and save up to 85% of associated cost. Over 6,000 fast-growing companies use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Sassiest listeners get 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/sassiest. That's vanta.com/sassiest.
Okay, it's time again for the Sassiest podcast, and now we are really getting close to the event.
1 weekend away.
Yeah, 1 weekend away, and the main event starts on Tuesday, but I know that a lot of you also going to be active on day zero, because we have a lot of exciting things there as well. We start with workshops and deep dives with some of our keynote speakers. Our CEO network, they get the pleasure of spending 2 hours with Jaco, our main keynote. And also we have sessions for our revenue teams and our product and CTO teams. So we start out like that in Monday morning, and then we have some social activities during the day. We have the paddle tournament and the canal tour. It's going to be crammed with people, and a really good way of starting the event, getting to know people in that kind of context. After that, it's time for the network dinner. So members of the CEO and executive networks, the speakers, and our community partners will meet. We have more than 200 people will attend that dinner. And that's, the event hasn't really started yet. And then we have 2 full days. We have 44 speakers. We have, you know, food and drinks, all of that. We have the networking. The Brella app has been going warm here for a couple of weeks. And there are going to be so many one-to-one meetings during the days. We have a great party prepared for you for Tuesday evening. And Daniel, am I forgetting something?
I think you had it all, and it all comes down to make the most of it. This is up to you. Yeah. You know, we are serving you here. We promise you that we will serve you the people, the content, and activities for you to make the most out of this.
Yeah.
So just engage and embrace their, like, you know, and then you walk home with a playbook that inspires you, that gives you concrete ideas of how to progress, and a brand new network, people that you can, you know, call and be like, hey, how did you do this? Or I have an idea. What do you think about this? That's really what SaaS community is all about.
Yeah, maybe you get a friend for life. And also, we have other activities. We have yoga and run in the morning, day two, and we end off with a poker tournament, and really looking forward to that. Just sitting and looking at some cards, knowing that everything hopefully went fine and that we can start looking forward to other activities in the year. I know the week after we're going to have our eyes on Amsterdam, and we have October 1st and 2nd. The next Sassiest in Amsterdam, that this year will be way bigger than the year before. You're going to recognize the full setup that we have in Malmö. But enough with that.
Do you know how they say fantastic in Netherlands?
Fantastic.
Yeah, actually.
Something like that.
Yes. So we're going for a fantastic event.
And now we go to a fantastic episode with a person that has been very engaged in our executive network. Really thank you for that. And now we're going to pick his brain on how it is to work when you mainly get your leads inbound. Today, we are really happy to have Bas van Wijk, the VP of Commercial Operations at Ask Cody, here as a guest in the SaaSiest podcast. Hello, Bas. How are you today?
Thanks, Thomas. Hi, Daniel. Looking forward to spending some time with you guys today.
Likewise, so are we. And we were just chit-chatting here that, you know, we all have busy schedules, but there's something special in, you know, coming together. Obviously, this is a virtual room now, but just, you know, moving away from your day-to-day exercise to come in a session like this and just exchange ideas. At least we enjoy it a lot and we appreciate you taking the time for us here.
Yeah,
very much looking forward to it. Like I said, it's a positive disruption.
There you go. Yeah, I see you're big with the words. This will be a great episode. So if there's somebody out there listening to this episode and they don't know Bas, like, how would you describe yourself?
Oof. Danish or Dutch?
Dutch, well on the way becoming Danish.
Okay.
Yeah, like I feel there's a backstory there. Like, okay, tell us a little bit more about Danish on the way to becoming, or Dutch becoming Danish.
There's not so far between Dutch and Danes. They have more or less the same attitude. They have the same kind of black humor. You might know the competition between Swedes and Danes.
Sure.
We don't know anything about it because we're on the Swedish side. So like we always win. So we don't see any competition. But I heard they are a little bit bothered.
Yeah, that could also be there with Dutchies and Danes. But they tend to like each other. And I must say, I moved here 10 years ago, and I doubt that I will go back.
Hmm. So what's so good about Denmark?
My wife also took care. My wife took care of that. We bought a house. We have kids here. We have a life here. So
yeah.
But what is good about Denmark? What is not good about Denmark? People, attitude, humor, quality of life.
You know, we love the Danes, but there's one thing that really bothers us now.
Let me know.
With our shitty currency.
Yeah.
There, I said it. With our shitty currency right now. Going to Denmark, it used to be such a pleasure. It's no longer, at least from a financial perspective, it's not a pleasure at all. As a Swede, going to Denmark is like, it feels like going to Dubai.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's actually getting the other way around now.
Yeah, exactly.
Danes are going to Sweden to get a good deal.
Yeah. And maybe that's why there is so many Danes at SaaSiest, but probably other other reasons as well.
I would say other reasons.
Yeah. So Bas, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah. So like I said, I'm Bas, Dutchie, from Holland, living in Denmark. I've been here for just over 10 years. Took a long time to learn the language. Almost there now, I think, still with a heavy accent, but they seem to accept it. Mm-hmm. I like colors, especially SaaSiest pink. I'm wearing baseball caps.
Yeah.
It's becoming kind of a brand, I must say. Oh, you're the Dutchie with the cap. Yeah, that's what it is. I bike, or I like to ride bikes. Now, due to the weather, I'm on a spinning cycle quite often. But I have all five different bikes. Really enjoyed it. Actually, one from our network group also had a lot of bikes.
Yeah. So is that five different types of bikes, like different sizes of the wheels?
Yeah, so it's a racer. It's a mountain bike. It's a cross bike. It's a city bike and a spinning bike.
Okay.
So it's all of them. I wish I'd used them more because there's only one. There's no dust on right now.
So if you're going out in Copenhagen and maybe you are getting out to... There is a really cool place where you can go. It's with the sea and it's containers and there is food markets and you can sort of get a bottle of wine and sit at the sea.
Rafsaøen.
Yeah.
I probably pronounce it differently.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So if you're going there with your wife bicycling, which cycle do you bring?
Then it's probably the city bike. And then my wife is on they call it a Lelcykel. So it's one of those electric bikes where the kids also can go in.
Mm. Okay, so is there anything more on the personal side that we should cover before you could say something about sort of your work?
Good question. So I joined SaaSiest 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really personal, but I was a bit late to the stage there, but I'm very happy to be part of it.
Yeah.
I think it's been the most impactful network I've been a part of. So that has been very cool.
Yeah.
Something really personal about myself, I genuinely enjoy helping people.
Yeah, sure.
That's also a bit of an outreach to the network. Mm-hmm. If there's something that we talk about today you would like to know more of, I would be very happy to jump on a coffee call.
Absolutely.
And help.
All right then. So if we would go more on the professional side, what can you tell us about yourself there?
Yeah, so I've worked with marketing more or less my whole life, so almost 20 years. That also reveals a bit of my my age. I'm just over 40 right now. But always in international B2B companies focusing on technology. So, of course, the last years here at Ask Cody. Been through almost all the marketing professions except from the creative.
Okay.
That's not... that hasn't crossed my path yet. I've also been in some sales roles up until three times, and so currently in sales / commercial operations. I've built the marketing team at Ask Cody. Maybe also interesting. So very interesting in finding out what's the challenges, what kind of people do you need in that team. Grew from one being one single person, being me, to seven at some point.
Okay.
Currently, we're a commercial operations team of five. Mm. Really cool, awesome team. So yeah, that's a bit of my commercial / marketing background.
All right. So Ask Cody, what's that? What are you guys about?
Yeah, you can describe it in a lot of different ways. So if you describe it for our customers, it's probably different. But we help organizations book meetings, order services, and welcome visitors in their company. So that's also the name, Ask Cody. A lot of people are asking, what does that mean?
Mm.
So do you need an available meeting room? Ask Cody. Do you need your coffee with your meeting? Ask Cody.
Okay.
So why Cody and not Josh?
We like Cody better. No, it has something to do with the origin. So okay. It was the code delivering the results
okay.
At some point. So you ask the code for what you need.
All right. So is it the chatbot or what is it really?
Yeah, that's the risk of using that analogy.
Yeah.
That becomes a chatbot, but it's actually a tool that is integrated with your Outlook.
Okay.
So you can order your meeting room and your coffee, but also welcome your visitors via Outlook with an add-in. So that's what we do. We're around 5 million ARR at the moment.
Yeah.
We have currently around 300 customers as paying customers, you could say.
And who's the ideal customer in your world? Like, you know, like obviously somebody that uses Outlook, but what else? Like what else defines a good customer?
Yeah, I usually try to say that so companies where meetings are important,
hmm.
As in really important, where real estate prices are high and where the people attending the meetings are very expensive. As an example, lawyers,
yeah.
An example.
Yeah.
They usually are in those big expensive cities. They have lawyers that cost a lot of money and they earn actually their money on having meetings with customers.
Yeah. But has it been a tough time then now when more meetings are virtual and, you know, Corona's struck and so on?
I don't like tough. I'm a positive of nature. I would call it challenging and interesting.
Yeah.
And then the English interesting and not the US interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, Corona, nobody's at the office. So who's going to order that catering and who's welcoming visitors at the office? That has been challenging.
Mm.
Against the odds, we grew 30% every year during Corona.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you find other usages of your solution or how could you grow during that period?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did, we tipped to desk booking as well, because there were a lot of customers where people were not allowed to sit on every desk, but every other desk. So people needed to book the desks in advance, as an example.
Ah, okay.
And that gave us something. But also a lot of companies, when they implement software like us, it takes a lot of time. It's long projects.
Mm-hmm.
So not having anyone to disturb you at the office, it might also be a very good time to implement software like that.
Okay.
So we were quite lucky there to be able to grow steadily.
Is it like a plugin that lives in Outlook? Like, do you go to the Microsoft store and say, like, I'm going to buy Ask Cody here? Or like, how does this look in practice?
Yeah, it could potentially be our next step that you go to the store and buy it. It is not now. Now you install it. So you deploy it as a plugin. So that's for the one requesting a meeting room catering and pre-announced visitors. But then you also have the teams that actually delivering the service and welcome the guests. That is a separate portal that people use where they have task lists, calendars, overview, which meeting happens where do I need to deliver that coffee? That kind of stuff.
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. So how many employees are you guys?
So we're 30 people, more or less evenly divided between the commercial team, 15 and 15 product slash development people.
All right.
So we develop everything in-house.
And is there any particular markets you focus on when it comes to your sales and marketing?
Yeah, just due to the nature of our product, it's usually where big companies are concentrated.
Yeah.
Metropoles, big cities. North America is a very big market for us. Of course, our home market here in Denmark, but also in Scandinavia, Western Europe, Germany. We have some larger companies in Germany as well that use our product. So that would be our main. We have a main concentration of customers there, but also our focus.
Yeah. And are you VC backed, or how are you funded?
Yeah, we're VC backed. We had a seed round and a series. I don't think it's shared publicly how much and what the owner shares are. So I will not. I will leave it at that. But I can say it's the same company that also funded Actimo.
Okay.
And Plutix.
All right.
As an example.
Two companies we know of.
Yeah.
Could you say what VC it was, or?
Yeah, it's Promentum Equity Partners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So what we're going to talk about today is that I think what's a little bit special with Ask Cody is that you're almost 100% inbound when it comes to your sales leads. And has it always been like that? And is that a good thing? Take us through it.
Yeah, there's of course a bit of history in. So when we started out, we were bootstrapped, and then at some point you get some money and you get some funding, and then you need to show that you can grow. So we did what every sales company did, went outbound, a lot of salespeople, and just get those customers in. But at some point we pivoted to an inbound only, and it's 100% inbound. It's of course nice to say it's not always 100%, but currently we're only acting upon incoming leads, so demo requests, and not having any outbound activities.
So why did you pivot?
I would say around 3 years, 3.5 years ago, just before I started, I was able to take over and continue that journey here to going to all inbound.
But why did you do it? What was wrong with the sales-led motion?
There's in theory nothing wrong with the sales-led motion, but that what we found out was the efficiency or the inefficiency in it. You need a lot of calls, you need a lot of salespeople, you need a lot of handling, you need to manage a lot of calls for the output effect. One thing is using money, the other thing is earning money. And that also became more important for us to have a sustainable growth there. So not burning your money, extending your burn.
Okay, so had you already seen that you had a model for inbound that worked well, that you could sort of scale? Or did you have to start experiment and find a way to sort of work with inbound instead as the main source of leads?
Yeah, it had to be invented from scratch.
So you just fired all the salespersons and then you said, let's sit down here and find a new ways of working.
No, not exactly. I would also not like to take credit for that part. It was my predecessor that initiated that whole process. But in a way, there's also, of course, some natural turnover that happens.
Yeah.
And then one thing leads to the other. A part of it is necessity. Another thing is new ideas. Another thing is hiring people that have inbound focus, and that process has led us to where we are now. It almost feels a bit strange because when I send in the topic to you guys to talk about it, we've now hired an external or an outbound salesperson in US.
Okay.
So it feels a bit it's still a large part of what we do is focused on inbound. Building communities, as an example.
Okay.
Focusing on creating demand. So if you have your addressable market of 100%, normally you would do lead capture only on that 5%, but also focusing on the 95% that is not in market right now to buy, to mold them to when they had the need that they would go out and come to us.
I mean, I'm generalizing a little bit here, but to me, and I think to anybody else out there, having a strong inbound machine is, you know, a little bit of a wet dream. Everybody wants to have leads come their way, self-register via the website, self-qualify via the website. I don't know to what extent you guys do all of those things. Mm-hmm. Like, but what did you do? Because it sounded like, okay, it's not like there was a super active motion when you had the sales motion in place. So like, what are some of the things you put in place that started, you know, giving you and showing you that results that, okay, we might have a thing here. Like, how did you start drive traffic? How did you make sure you started converting on that traffic? How did you make sure that it's the right traffic that converts?
Yeah. I mean, things over time changed a bit, but where we started was mostly our SEO activities. So we built a website where we had content. We were very lucky to have a founder that is very knowledgeable, very intelligent, easy to come up with stories, angles, and content. So he stood for more or less 50% of all the content that we generated to drive people in. The funny thing, we still have the best performing content that we have that is creative meeting room names, really high funnel. But I mean, it's a compelling event, right? When somebody tries to develop new meeting rooms, then it makes sense to also have a new meeting room booking system. It's still driving a lot of traffic and revenue for us.
So it's a blog post or?
It's just a blog post.
Okay.
Yeah. It's as easy as that. It's just one example of a lot, but that's how it started.
Can you share how many visitors you have to such a web blog post?
Yeah, you're really testing me now, Thomas. And I don't know it by head, but it's in the top 10 of best performing blogs right now.
Okay. But so how did they find that? Like, you know, they just, you know, people Googling, give me creative meeting room names or?
Yeah, people looking for ideas for meeting room names.
So it was organic. It's not like you didn't spend a gazillion amount of dollars on AdWords or anything like that.
No, that came later, of course, right? You start organic, then you start paying, then you start to driving in. First, you need to test what works, and then you put your money on the right things. Then you start to reuse the content. So you make videos, you make sound clips, then you do posts on LinkedIn, both organic and paid, and then it will come automatically.
So a question here. Do you mainly put this kind of blog posts on your own website, or do you have other places where you put this kind of content that maybe, you know, attracts more traffic?
Yeah, so to start with, it was only the website. Then you get those traditional companies posting their blog posts on their LinkedIn. But we evolved from that now, where we go more into personal posts from our employees that write something, their view on things, and not even linking to the content, just reusing the content, using the content to get attention on LinkedIn.
So 160 plus creative ideas for meeting room names.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar? Yeah, I Google it here. So it's actually an ebook, a PDF here, yeah.
Ungated, important.
Yeah, I see. It's ungated, yeah? So famous movies, Avatar, Titanic, Star Wars, Jurassic Worlds. What do we have more? We have board games, children's games.
All right. So while Thomas is going through the list of 116 names here, you decided to early bet on content that would resonate with your audience. And it sounded like, I don't know if this was an exception to the rule, but it sounded like you decided to go a little bit for the humorous angle here. Is that something that played along through all the content you did, or?
No, our content is very, very divided in specific categories. This is obviously very top funnel. So it's a long way from making a buying decision, you could say. So yes, maybe that high level is a bit more edgy or funny, you could call it, or a bit more laid back, but the lower you come in the funnel, the more serious it gets. So we have a lot of technical, really technical issues. I mean, we're very clear on our persona, so we know exactly what they're missing, what they're lacking, what they're frustrated about.
Right.
So that we try to solve it both in our content, but mainly also our help center. Mm-hmm. Our help center is driving, I think, the half, if not more, of our traffic.
How does your help center drive half of the traffic? It's like, in my mind, I'm thinking the help center is, that's, you know, your existing customers asking certain things.
Yeah, so a lot of our potential customers, they find the need for a product like ours based on an issue they have, without going into too much details, which I don't even myself understand. But solving something like multiple email domains on their exchange, that drives us a lot of traffic and also a lot of potential needs.
Yeah. But it seems like you have put your whole knowledge base public.
Yeah.
So it's hundreds of pages and there's videos and all kind of things that you need to know about.
Yeah. So the whole foundation of our website, of our CEO, and now we're only talking CEO, we have a lot of other channels, is based on a book from Marcus Sheridan. I don't know if you know it. It's called They Ask, You Answer.
Okay.
That is our Bible. Everybody who starts working at us in the commercial team gets that book and is required to read that. Is their Bible.
Okay.
What does it say? Like, if you would summarize that book in three sentences. I haven't read it. Thomas, I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't read it.
Okay.
It it basically goes out of when you are a customer, then you have a certain need. And that Marcus Sheridan, with his own company, selling swimming pools, found out that people always ask the same questions. And it really goes out to that you need to answer those questions people have. So you need to learn from your customers. You need to listen to your customers. You need to be part of those sales calls where you collect all the questions that you get from customers. And then you make an effort of answering that in your content.
Got it. So even before the question maybe comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you had early on content that started, you know, to generate some positive results. What did you do then? Did you say like, okay, we're going to spit out this... funny names of meeting rooms every month, or like, you know, how do you spin off that to make sure that there's a continued success and that it wasn't one spike in traffic early on?
Really, that gathering questions that are important to our potential and current customers and turn that into content. That is really our idealist.
And how did you gather that? Is, I guess, what I'm asking for. Like, did you like sit down with all your salespeople and be like, salespeople, I need you to write down all the questions you've ever had to answer. Give them to me, and then we'll make a big library of it and answers.
Yes, and more. We have a tool called Gong.
Yeah.
Well, familiar to you guys. So a lot of our sales calls, with permission of our customers, is getting recorded. That means that we have unlimited access to every question that a customer asks.
Right.
And we can also easily search for it. I don't have any shares in Gong, but I think it's a really cool tool to get input and the knowledge that you need as a marketeer,
right,
to make good content.
Yeah. And then, so you have all of this, and then what did you do? Did you say like, okay, I have to go and hire five fantastic writers now to start spitting out content? Or like, you know, that's a barrier that many people see in front of them. Like, we've never created content like this. How do we actually start spitting out good quality content that represents the brand and attracts, you know, some conversion?
So, we started using agencies. So my predecessor hired agencies to write the content.
Yeah.
So professional people writing it. He was one person alone. So we also needed the bandwidth to do that. But further on, when I was lucky to take over, we hired a content marketing specialist as the first.
Okay.
Both writing, but also videos. After that, we hired a product marketing manager with video skills. That also turned all those blogs into videos afterwards.
So is it, you mentioned the content, the blog post, the sort of the knowledge center. Is there other inbound sources that are substantial for you guys?
Yeah, I see two other things, or it's actually one thing divided in two. So one is joining communities.
Yeah.
I mean, we as marketers do that with SaaSists. But we do that in a community called ILTA, that has our ICP and our persona as their main target group.
Okay.
So there's one event each year, but they have a whole a list of events and meeting ups where those people just meet. It's literally taken from our ICP and our persona. So that really hits the nail. So we join in the community. We sign up as speakers. We join their events. And we write white papers for them to share in their magazines, as an example. That's one, joining others. But we're also building our own community.
Okay.
Meaning that we let our customers talk to other customers. So instead of us being the barrier in between, we have days where we have them together where they can help each other get most out of the product, answer questions one might have. And that is as simple as a receptionist to another receptionist that help each other do that.
Okay.
And that we do both digitally. We have a LinkedIn group, community group, but also with physical events. But also we set up two customers if they're in a buying, close to a buying decision, that one can reference the other as an example and build a community that way.
Okay.
More than 50% of the leads that we get in come from when customers themselves say word of mouth, meaning from a colleague, from a peer, from somebody I met at that event, that way.
Okay. So it sounds like it's obviously a well-working machine. 100% of the funnel comes from this type of exercise. If you would have an extra change of money, somebody like just drops a purse with gold on your desk and be like, you can spend this on one or two activities to further accelerate your inbound exercise. Where would you spend it today?
Very good question. I would go all in on building our own community.
Yeah.
Because it's very, and you guys know that, it's very labor intensive. I mean, the fact that you guys are under the water at the moment in preparing for SaaS, that says a lot, but it requires a lot of resources and alignment and project management. So I would say I would definitely spend my money there.
Okay. All in building a community. We like that. We can sign off on that. And actually, we see that more and more out there. So I have another question that probably flipped the coin a little bit. People listening to this, now they're probably thinking like, this is great. I also want to do this. Like, we should all do this.
Why not do it?
And of course, I know it's not, you know, an easy path to get to where you guys are at. So like, we can maybe probably talk about that a little bit more. But one thing I wanted to ask you is that, is there any downside of this? Do you ever feel like we're missing out here?
How long do we have? I mean, you're handing over a lot of trust in a system that is not very predictable.
Okay.
I mean, if you do outbound, it's number game, right? It's we need to reach that, to reach that, to reach that. It's very easy. This is more subjective to seasonality, as an example. And if you then turn that into sales and marketing corporation, sales thinks tomorrow, this deal, this customer. Marketing thinks half a year ahead. How do you match those two? Mm. I mean, if we have a seasonality where in a month we're only getting 10 leads in, then I have the sales manager in my neck saying, Bas, it's not delivering. We need to do something now. And then I need to say, okay, trust the process. Mm-hmm. It's an average game. Yeah. It's over the whole year. So it requires a lot of syncing, managing expectations. It's a slow boat. It's a slow boat to turn. So what you do now has an effect in half a year.
Yeah.
And it's really something that you need to keep in mind. As an example, our sales cycles at some point were 1.5 years.
Wow.
There was also Corona that stretched that. We're at 8 months now, but it's still very long sales cycles. What you often see with outbound, then you do more lead capturing than generating demand, meaning that the sales cycle is also shorter. So you have a faster effect. So there are a lot of challenges there. Another thing is 3 years ago, we had 6 competitors. Now we have 46. So there will always be 1, 2, 3, or 10 that have a lot more money to spend on that inbound engine than you have.
Right.
So there are a lot of challenges in that. I mean, it's no secret. We just hired an outbound person now just to test if that still works for us. But I would say it's a very efficient engine. So 1 out of 10 demo calls at some point turned into a customer.
Yeah.
That also meant that we could manage with one salesperson to cover that.
So are you running a model that most people do, or are you running what I sometimes refer to the HubSpot model? You know, if you go to HubSpot and you're looking for an article like, you know, how to run a QBR, and then you can bet your butt on that they have a white paper on this, you can download that. And somewhere there is an intelligent trigger on their end. If you download that white paper, you might not get a callback because it's not a right trigger, or you haven't triggered, you know, enough times and so on. But if you go and download something else, then something magically happens in their systems and somebody will, you know, ping me and be like, hey, you need some help? I can help you here. Like, do you act on each and every download and request?
No, we dropped that. It was too inefficient. So what we do, there's an old marketing rule that says if you need to remember a brand or what they do, you need to hear it 11 times. So what we make sure is that we come in front of people at least 11 times throughout a period. And that is by just making sure that you have content that is relevant for them. If that is then shared on whichever channel, that doesn't matter as long as it's comes in front. And then we hope that they remember us. Not only hope, we know, because that's what we hear back, and make sure that they book their demos themselves.
Right.
We're not forcing people into demos or book a demo, get an Xbox or
yeah,
none of that.
So how do you know that you have touched them 11 times?
We don't.
No.
other than we have, of course, tracking in HubSpot.
Yeah, okay.
So we can see it. We know which pages they have visited, if they share their the cookies.
Okay, and earlier on here, you said a little bit, it sounded like you made the decision to basically ungate everything.
Yeah, quite early on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us why, and also tell us like what are the results you've seen. And I don't know if you ever at some point figured like we're going to try gating something just because to get those signups. Like what's the philosophy there?
Yeah, so we had gated all our white papers. So also the one Thomas just found about those creative meaning room names. But we also saw that it created barriers for people. So we had a lot of views, but never any emails coming out. And then the ones that did leave their email, when we called them, they said, yeah, I'm not interested, just wanted the meeting room names.
Right.
As an example.
Yeah.
So we just decided to remove it and see what happens. And we could see it didn't have an impact on outcome, how many customers we got, but it got an impact on our effectivity.
Okay.
I mean, we were at 100 MQLs to one customer. Now we're on 10 MQLs to one customer. So that really, really helped us in being more efficient and also more fun for a salesperson, right?
Right.
Imagine if you need to call 80, let's stick to the 100 and only one at some point tends to be a customer. Or you can focus really with all you have on those 10.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with that. But if I would be a little bit devil's advocate here, maybe because I wear the sales hat sometimes, that's where my background comes from. I 100% agree. I'd rather win 1 out of 10 than 1 out of 100. But at the same time, if it's much faster to produce the 100 and go through those, if the velocity is higher there, well, then maybe I'll deal with that actually anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, and it's also, I mean, it's part of the discussions that we had as well with our salespeople.
Yeah.
It just turned out that if you put those two next to each other, so the way we do it now and how we had done it, it just shows the results much more clear.
Yeah.
Than before. It just, I mean, at some point we had really zero customers out of those content downloads.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's very demotivating for salespeople as well. And you know what happens if it doesn't work with somebody in sales? I've been in sales 2.5 years, so no. If it doesn't work, don't do it. Do something else.
Right.
So that we might as well strip it anyways.
So you mentioned here a little bit that, you know, obviously in your inbound machinery, just like for everybody else, sometimes there's seasonality, there's certain uncertainties. It's a little bit more tricky to predict. Like, what other challenges have you seen or are you experiencing that you want to like highlight for other people here that are betting all and going all in on inbound?
It's very important that you have a clear ICP and a clear persona landscape where you focus on. Because if you change strategy, if you change direction, it's a very slow and heavy boat. So if you want to turn it, it takes a lot of time. So if you take this as the way to do it, make sure that you're very clear on and that you have tested where your ICP, where your persona is. Because changing it takes time. As an example, we shifted from more or less everything that was corporate and above a number of employees to very specific on law firms, North America, as an example.
Right.
It took us a year to build $1.5 million in pipeline.
Mm.
It's a long time.
Yeah. And what's the ACV for you guys?
I think we're currently on around 20.
Okay.
Okay, US dollars.
Yeah. Gotcha. And all right, that makes also a lot of sense. And tell us a little bit, you mentioned here that you have also restructured your teams a little bit. Like, I'm not sure if I understood that correctly, but you don't have a marketing team per se. It's something else?
Yeah. So we call our commercial team currently, that's everything that is commercial, CX, sales, and marketing into one commercial team. Mm-hmm. We still have our, what we now call revenue, and our customer experience team. But then we have a commercial operations that supports everything, including marketing. That is also part of that team. When you talk marketing and sales cooperation, just sometimes calling it marketing or calling it sales makes it difficult to work together. And what we do now is we make optimal use of every skill. As an example, I like doing something with colors and PowerPoint. So why don't I make that sales pitch? Somebody in sales is very good in translating what the customer needs. So why don't we use that skill in marketing to generate our content? So instead of having that siloed workaround, we do it that way. Hmm. And so far, we transformed in November last year. And so far, the collaboration really works. We also now have projects where it's not marketing, it's organizing an event. It's one from CX, it's one from marketing, one from sales. They work together to do that. And for us, that really, really works.
Okay. So I guess there might be people listening now and thinking, you know, we should really vamp up our inbound game, that there is things to, that we could really improve how we do this. So what would be your three best tips to companies that wants to take this to the next level?
Buy a book. They ask you answer as inspiration. And then decide for yourself, because it's based on old tactics and old HubSpot inbound, but translated to today. Two, start following Refine Labs and Chris Walker as an example.
Is this still any good?
you need to filter it a bit more, because he's spreading out. Yeah. So it's becoming less relevant for everyone. But take Revenue Vitals episodes 80 until 120, and then you get enough inspiration there. And three, and I'm not bullshitting here, become part of a network like Sassiest. I mean, the inspiration we got from you, from the speakers at SaaS, the last year, and April Dunford, as an example, has done wonders for our pitching game. So I would really start there. And then I would like to add a fourth one. If you really want to start it, doing it, and see how we do it, I will give you a look under the hood in our systems and show you how it looks.
That's a good offer.
That is a good offer. Now, that is how a community should work. Community members offering each other.
So how can they reach out to you, Bas?
I'm on LinkedIn, Bas van Wijk. I'm also a Sassiest, and I will wear this hat so you can recognize me through all the other pink, hopefully. you can also book me via the meeting app. What was it called? Brella?
Yeah, it's Brella.
Yeah.
So please do. I'll be happy to help. Like I said in the start, I get genuinely happy of helping people. So if I can do the slightest to get somebody on the way, then we're happy to do that.
And great. Always happy to have you in the room. Also been a pleasure having you in the Executive Network for Marketing here for a few years. And we'll see you at Sassiest.
I'm really looking forward to Sassiest. So, yeah. You guys get your game together, and then we're going to enjoy all the good activities that you've planned.
Definitely.
Yeah, we have some surprises up our sleeves, so I hope it will be enjoyable.
Ooh, the bar is now here.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, guys.
Yeah.
And good luck in preparation.
Thank you. Thank you.
See you soon.
So, Daniel, what's your takeaway from this episode?
I like the simplicity in, at least I see some simplicity, and it's probably difficult to get there, but the simplicity in creating content that answers real questions. So he had this example, like, you know, our customers have lots of questions. We've just taken that data and then answered those questions and produced different types of blogs and posts and so on. So it's not to inspire, it's to address a question. And that, of course, in its own probably inspires a lot. But It's a rather simple setup if you think about it. You probably already know if you ask your salespeople, what are the top 100 questions they're asked related to your services? Well, why don't you create content around that?
Maybe we should do that.
Yeah.
We get questions all the time.
We do. Like I said, it's like the concept in itself, it's simple. Probably getting there is a tricky exercise and manages, requires some maneuvering. But hey, boss, if you see us maybe spitting out a bunch of content, you know where the idea came from. Thomas, what about you? I see you're thinking hard here now. This is a little bit your area, like marketing, inbound.
Yeah. No, but I get inspired of getting a lot more content out there.
Although he did say in this case, less is more.
Yeah, he said less is more, but in the same time, they put all their knowledge articles and the support center out there. So they create a lot of content all the time. And, you know, it's also, I think, when he talked about the hires that they have made, they made sure also that these people can create videos and can create different kinds of content. And but I think also what was really, you know, evident this with the gated and ungated content. I mean, it's not just about creating and fetching those MQLs and feeding them to your salesperson. Because, okay, it can be great to get, you know, the opportunity to call 100 prospects. But if you only get one customer, then it's just annoying and it's a waste of time, right? So maybe not be so focused on capturing all these easy top funnel leads, but making sure that you create content and have maybe a more of a pull effect that assures you that you work on the really interesting cases.
All right, I think we'll leave it at that because we still have some work to do, and there's some small details here and there, Thomas, right?
Yeah, it is. So what's on your to-do list?
God bless everybody that's contributing to this. There's always, you know, somebody deciding to make a little bit of a change here and there to their slide deck. And
may it be one or two speakers that haven't submitted their slide deck yet, even if there's a few days left.
Don't want to point out any names. Everybody's trying their hardest. So there is a little bit of work around that, just making sure that, you know, everything flies well and so on.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, it's a little bit of a logistic exercise.
Yes.
Because what people don't sometimes realize until they show up, especially if it's the first time, you know, you think you go to a venue in Malmö where the main conference is. That's very true. But actually, we basically occupy half of the city here, different buildings, different activities throughout the 3 days. You know, there's a paddle hall and courts that is involved. There's workshop rooms across the river of where we have the venue. There is obviously the main venue and so on. So just logistically making sure that we have staff everywhere, that there is the right type of material everywhere.
Yeah.
So wherever you interact with us, you should feel the sassiest vibe. And honestly, when you come there, why don't you already start checking and looking around in the hotels you've checked in? I can promise you, you'll feel the sassiest vibe already there if you checked in at any of the 5 hotels we told you about.
All right.
All right. Looking forward to meeting you all on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week here. See you all soon.